the Hoosier State loses another political icon. Indiana faces another abortion lawsuit. That, plus a new initiative from Joe Donnelly, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending May 3rd, 2019.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Built on a 100-plus-year foundation of legal service, Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients stay ahead of a changing world. Working to develop an understanding of each client's needs to help build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, former Indiana Senator Richard Lugar passed away at the age of 87. Richard Lugar served two terms as mayor of Indianapolis before joining the U.S. Senate in 1977. Along with Democratic Senator Sam Nunn, Lugar, a Republican, led the effort to help former Soviet states dismantle their weapons of mass destruction and nuclear arsenals. The praise poured in for the Hoosier icon from both sides of the aisle. Governor Eric Holcomb called Lugar one of Indiana's best ever, and longtime Indiana Congressman Lee Hamilton, a Democrat, called him a model statesman, someone who elevated bipartisanship. Lugar, who served in the Senate until his 2012 defeat in the GOP primary to State Treasurer Richard Murdoch, also ran unsuccessfully for president in 1996. What is Richard Lugar's greatest legacy? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, Lindsay Erdody, state government reporter for the Indianapolis Business Journal, and Nikki Kelly, statehouse reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Jennifer Hollowell, what is Lugar's greatest legacy here in Indiana?
It's impossible to answer that in less than 2 hours. But, you know, he impacted so many people, millions of people in different ways. And, you know, starting with changing the trajectory of Indianapolis and the way he shaped the city and communities around it, making the world a safer place. The work he did modernizing ag policy and helping farmers across America, changing really Indiana and the landscape. If you look at all of the different leaders who have served in state and local and federal government who were inspired by Senator Lugar, who had worked for mayor or Senator Lugar, you know, that list is long and continues to grow, and those folks are impacting people.
Not to mention and then, the Lugar series.
And the Lugar series, right, helping Republican women learn how to run for office and get elected, and if not get elected, play a role in government. I mean, it's impossible to answer that really in a short period of time because there's just such a tremendous impact here and across the globe.
Obviously, a lot of the attention was focused on all of his nuclear disarmament work, and for folks outside of Indiana, that makes the most sense because it's the most immediate impact I think a lot of them see and felt throughout his time. But I feel like something that hasn't been talked about as much is something you mentioned right off the top, which is, I mean, the stuff we talked about this session with the things that Indianapolis is trying to do with its downtown, you can trace back the roots of that to Richard Lugar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can. I mean, that was Unigov. And it was politically, it was inspired because you had all of those entities united under the umbrella of Indianapolis, except for Speedway, Lawrence, and Beech Grove, who got to elect their own mayors and their own city council and still got to vote for Indianapolis and the city county council at large, which, of course, gave Bill Hudnut his first election and second election. And so it was politically inspired, too. But I think that this I agree with everything Jennifer said. And I think the other thing that he should be noted for and remembered for is the idea that compromise and bipartisanship are not dirty words. I mean, he lived by that. He was a very, very good friend to Birch and Evan Bayh, for example, and really mentored and worked together with them. So he did all of that, but I think it's the non-Lugar bill.
Yeah.
Because the thing about that is you don't know how many thousands of lives that saved. You don't know how many dirty bombs would have been exploded but for their initiative in recognizing that problem and doing something which was politically untenable at the time. I mean, to suggest paying money to the Russians to take nuclear weapons out of circulation, I mean, I remember Lee Hamilton saying that that was one of the most difficult votes he made because people in southern Indiana didn't understand why you'd give the enemy anything. But yet it really made the world a safer place, and having the vision to see that and then the enough political strength to push it through is really to his credit.
To that point about bipartisanship and compromise, we had the memorial for Birch Bayh at the State House this week, and there were moments of silence for Richard Lugar, and Evan talked about Richard Lugar. And it struck me, and I said this on Twitter, that I'm not sure either Birch Bayh or Richard Lugar could get elected in Indiana today. We talked about that when Birch died, and we have almost concrete proof of that with Richard Lugar.
We do. I mean, hearing all these wonderful statements come out for both Birch and Richard Lugar in the past week or so. But, you know, I can't help but be bothered a little bit by the fact that all these people talking about what a statesman Richard Lugar was and how much he moved the party forward, most of that party abandoned him in 2012 because he wasn't Republican enough. And, you know, absolutely Birch Bayh couldn't have gotten impacted. So I hope all these people who are giving him credit for his bipartisanship and compromise remember that when it comes to election time. You know, let's elect those people too, not just give them kudos when they're gone.
They talked at the Birch Bayh Memorial about the both of them and maybe the pendulum swinging back at some point. Does the pendulum swing back at some point?
Possibly, but it's hard to tell. And I think it's also important to remember that he lost in a primary, and that's a totally different set of voters than it is in a general election. And so it's hard to say, you know, what's going to happen in the primary. So far, since 2012, I don't think we've seen it swing back. And, you know, looking at 2016 elections and 2018 elections, so it'll be interesting to see if we do see that swing back in 2020, especially in Indiana, since we've had all this discussion about bipartisanship.
I don't think you see it swinging back at all, and I think that's unfortunate. I think you look at the legislature and the fact we couldn't even get a hate crimes bill through. I mean, it's all ideologically driven, and you have to be a purist. You can't compromise. That's the political reality in Indiana.
No, not just Indiana.
Well.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question: would Richard Lugar or Birch Bayh win a statewide election in Indiana today? A, Lugar would, B, Bayh would, both of them would, or neither of them would. Last week's question: was the 2019 legislative session a victory for Hoosier teachers? 17% of you say yes, 68% say no, 15% want to find out a little bit more before they decide. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, Governor Eric Holcomb this week defended signing into law an anti-abortion measure that's been struck down in other states. The bill largely bans the second trimester procedure known as dilation and evacuation abortions. The ACLU of Indiana has already filed a lawsuit seeking to strike down the legislation. Holcomb says the threat of a lawsuit didn't factor into his decision to sign the bill.
The bills that I have signed have been out of my own conscience.
The ACLU has already scored victories in six other lawsuits against Indiana anti-abortion measures this decade at taxpayers' expense. And Democrats say that record shows Republicans' continued push to curtail abortion rights is not only dangerous to women, but also fiscally irresponsible. Indiana has paid out millions of dollars to the ACLU in the last few years because of those abortion lawsuits. And Delaney, should Republicans consider the legal costs of their anti-abortion bills?
You know, this isn't about even passing laws that are going to be upheld. This is about primary votes in Republican contests. That's what this is about. And showing your bona fides of being anti-abortion. They know they're going to be struck down. And they know they're wasting taxpayer resources fighting these. They don't care. Okay? And they want to tout the fact that they passed it, even if those terrible liberal courts strike it down. And we're going to see this over and over again. We see it with Curtis Hill all the time, where we're defending things that can't be defended. And we're doing it for political gain, not because of any interest in passing or even any expectation that passing that legislation is going to affect anything.
Democrats in the last few years have tried to basically make some of this argument through legislative moves, to put in amendments that would, you know, require a fund to be set up for the defense of these sorts of laws and force the legislature to put money into that fund. Should the legal cost of these bills be taken into consideration when folks are voting on them? Or is this an issue that rises above that?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, Anne is predicting all of these outcomes, which I don't think you can do. And you have seen the legislature not take up bills in the last few sessions for the reason that they knew they would be struck
down. Yeah,
went
much further, right.
And so they chose not to do that. I mean, I know this is shocking, but the Republicans at the State House don't really look to Ann or the ACLU for their legislative agenda.
How about to the courts? Since the courts have struck this down six times already, do you think they might look at those?
The bottom line here is, you know, we do have a lot of pro-life legislators. The governor is pro-life. These folks, we have more than 100 legislators who supported this, a majority, clearly, of legislators who are voted on by a majority of Hoosiers, and that's the agenda that they want to see passed. And so we can take it to the courts, but I don't think there's any reason.
They will take it to the courts,
yeah,
and
well,
they will
lose.
Yeah,
we'll
lose.
Jennifer brought up something. With the changes at the U.S. Supreme Court, there's obvious. I think it seems to be a clear, like, reinvigoration of, they're not just passing them even if they know they will be struck down, because maybe they won't.
I think that is why we're seeing, and not just in Indiana, but other states passing laws like this to see what's going to happen, because the Supreme Court does have a different makeup now, and there is some hope out there from conservative Republicans that these laws can stand up. And so, you know, to both of their points, I don't think you can necessarily count on them being struck down at this point.
I don't think the Supreme Court's going to repeal Roe v. Wade, because I think there would be an insurrection at the ballot box that they could not contain.
Maybe, but let me ask about the idea of the insurrection at the ballot box. Democrats have tried to use this argument a little bit, maybe not a ton in their campaign material, but this idea that you're passing these laws that are costing taxpayer dollars, that we're giving money to, basically just giving money away.
Funding the ICLU.
Yeah. They renovated their headquarters. It's very nice. I imagine. I know where
that
money
tax dollars will do that.
Know where that money came from. Does that have any impact with voters, or is this, again, the issue that rises above that?
Oh, I don't think voters are hearing that at all. I think when it comes to abortion, especially, you're so kind of caught, you either firmly believe one way or firmly in the other way, and the money is sort of just not what you care about. I mean, you have beliefs. And to be fair, yes, Republicans are doing this partly for their supporters, but they actually firmly believe in these laws, too.
Yeah. Well, former Indiana Senator Joe Donnelly is launching a new initiative aimed at helping Democrats connect with rural voters.
Donnelly's project, One Country, is a partnership with North Dakota Democrat Heidi Heitkamp, who similarly lost her 2018 re-election bid. Donnelly says data projections show that Democrats will continue to make gains in the popular vote, but not in the Electoral College, because population growth is in urban areas and states where Democrats already do well. The initiative will use Heitkamp's leftover campaign dollars and new fundraising efforts. Donnelly says the goal is largely to help Democrats win the 2020 presidential election, even as his party talks about abolishing the Electoral College in the future.
Nikki Kelly, Donnelly and Heitkamp lost in 2018 at a time when a bunch of other Democrats, at least on the House side, won. So why are they the ones to preach this message?
Well, I mean, in some ways it makes absolute sense. I mean, who lives and learns the message more than someone who lost by it? You know, live by the sword, die by the sword. I don't think Democrats can focus solely on their stronghold cities anymore to get elected. And so I think it's kind of an interesting idea for them to push, you know, appealing more to rural America.
Is that, obviously on the House side, they clearly don't need to do that much of that. But on the Senate side, and certainly on the presidential side, they do. So is this, first of all, they're starting this in early-ish 2019 ahead of a 2020 election that already seems to be in full swing. Is this too little too late, or can they make a difference?
I think it's possible they could make a difference, but it depends on, I guess, who they're working with and how much people are buying into this idea. I think it was interesting. I actually talked to Donnelly's former campaign manager shortly after the election, and he brought this up, that there wasn't enough, they didn't get enough in rural Indiana. You know, there's hope that in the suburb, for Democrats in the suburbs, that they're starting to see some demographics change and we might start to see some districts go their way. But in rural Indiana, there just hasn't been enough of that focus yet. And so he was already talking about how that's where Democrats need to be, because you can't get enough votes in Indianapolis, for example, for a Democrat to win statewide.
Is this something that's achievable for the Democratic Party? Can they make those sorts of inroads in rural Indiana?
No, I don't think they can at all. This is a real head-scratcher for me. And so, no, he couldn't figure out how to do it last year, and I don't think even, like, you know, lesson learned works, because at the end of the day, there is a huge disconnect, and voters know what the national message is, and Democrats on the national stage are talking about, you know, socialized health care and, you know, free college and abolishing ICE and all these things that are completely out of touch with rural America. And that's the overarching message. That's why they're not going to connect. And for Senator Donnelly, he wasn't able to do that here. And it can't be a, you know, I'll do one thing out in D.C. and another thing here, or I'm working with all these folks, but then I'm not.
This actually brings up a really interesting point to me. Joe Donnelly didn't run the National Democrats' message in 2018,
right,
and he still couldn't get over the hump.
Right.
So is that the biggest problem that Democrats in general face in trying to connect with
poll
voters?
Well, this is why we have the gubernatorial election and presidential years. It's always been the problem in Indiana for Democrats. But I think that there is an opportunity here that Jennifer's ignoring, and that is that the Republicans have ignored rural Indiana and rural areas in general. Under Trump's trade policies, farms are going bankrupt left and right. They're hurting from his trade wars. And in addition, we're not putting the resources into rural schools. We're not doing initiatives enough for preschool and all the other things that rural America wants to see. Republicans have been able, because of the gerrymandered districts in this state, to basically check them off and have said that, well, they're going to go with us anyway, so why do
That's
we need to
absurd.
Do anything? So I think there are opportunities there to address problems that rural Indiana is facing and that the Republicans have ignored for too many years. So we'll see.
That's completely absurd. Like,
it's not completely absurd.
No one could support that. Like, I don't know what evidence you have.
I can tell you what evidence I have. Chapter 12s have doubled in Indiana in the last year.
All over rural Indiana. I mean, and that's
bankruptcies
the legislature.
Bankruptcies of farms have doubled, okay? They've doubled in Indiana. And Wisconsin, dairy farmers are failing
voters?
Left and
absolutely
right.
Absolutely representing rural voters.
Yes, right.
Well,
uh-huh.
There's growing national and local support for bipartisan legislation introduced by Indiana Republican Senator Todd Young to raise the minimum smoking age.
The legislation, co-sponsored by Hawaii Democrat Brian Schatz, Illinois Democrat Dick Durbin, and Utah Republican Mitt Romney, would prohibit the sale of tobacco products, including e-cigarettes, to those under 21. National health groups like the American Lung Association and American Cancer Society, and local groups like the Indiana Chamber of Commerce and the Indiana Hospital Association, have thrown their support behind the measure. The legislation would also require retailers to card anyone under 30 when buying tobacco products. The push has a new boost this time around, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who's made the issue a priority.
Lindsay or Doty, this legislation has repeatedly failed here in Indiana, including this past session. Does it have a better chance at the national level?
It might. It wouldn't be the first time that Indiana has kind of waited to see what would happen on the federal level, and then we move on from there. And I think it's interesting that it not only has the bipartisan support right now in D.C., but it also has Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's support. And you know, he's the one that's deciding what's going to be heard and discussed. So I think that's a good sign for it, at least.
The same sort of groups who are for it at the national level are the same sort of groups that are for it here at this level, although we've started to see even the tobacco companies start to come around. So is this a matter of time now, it feels like?
I don't know. I honestly am not sure on this one, but I just don't know if enough Republicans are going to get behind sort of big government. I mean, that's, you know, flatly against
behavior,
them. And,
yeah.
And, you know, I can remember when House Speaker Brian Bosma, when it was discussed here, would say, oh, they can go serve, they can buy a gun, but they can't buy a cigarette. Although, I guess that's exactly what we do for alcohol, too. So,
Although we were sort of coerced into that by the federal
government.
We were.
Maybe they'll coerce us again.
That very argument was what I wanted to ask about, which is, if I can go and overseas and die for my country, why can I not buy a cigarette?
Why can you not buy a beer?
I think a lot of people have that same question.
Well, and I think that's a legitimate question. On the other hand, for the rest of the people that aren't serving, it seems to me, I think Todd Young should deserve some kudos for this, because it's got to be the biggest health risk for children. It really does. And starting them being addicted, whether it's to vaping with nicotine or to cigarettes, puts them on a trajectory for a very, very bad health outcome, and I think he deserves some credit for proposing that.
To that point about giving Todd Young some credit, this can't be the most popular position in Indiana. So is he putting himself out there a little bit on this one?
I think he is, and I think it's admirable. I mean, this is definitely not a partisan issue. It's a tough one, though, because to your point, that's the case that's been made when it ever came up
when
here
the vote
at the state
has
level.
Changed.
It's not going to happen in Indiana. But, we had gone through several years where nicotine use, tobacco use was on the decline,
now.
Right? And now, because of vaping, it's up. And vape, in many cases, is as addictive and more addictive than cigarettes because the amount of nicotine that you can put in.
And there are studies that show those who start vaping, a lot of them end up going to traditional cigarettes anyway.
Right, and the impact on young people they're finding out is worse. I mean, has significant impacts on them. And I think the number, there were an additional 1.5 million teenagers who started using nicotine products last year.
Indiana's own, the U.S. Surgeon General, Joe Adams, called this an epidemic, teens vaping. So, all right. Well, about half of Hoosiers have a favorable opinion of Governor Holcomb, according to the latest numbers from the Morning Consult.
9% approval rating is middle of the pack among his fellow governors. That number has held fairly steady since he took office, down slightly in the last two quarters, but always hovering around 50%. Steady, too, is his disapproval rating, 22% in the latest poll, only slightly worse than where he started in 2017. Up, however, is the percentage of Hoosiers who either don't know or don't have an opinion of Holcomb, 29% in the latest poll. That's the highest percentage since he took office more than 2 years ago.
Jennifer Hollowell, is there any concern at some point about the increasing percentage of people who say they don't know or don't have an opinion of Eric Holcomb?
I don't know that really is increasing. I mean, I've studied polls many, many years, 25 years, I guess, now, and I don't necessarily pay attention to some of these surveys from media outlets. Some of them are just not the same as what we would use. And it's also kind of within the margin, so it doesn't matter. But
sure.
I think Governor Holcomb is in a tremendous spot right now. And keep in mind, he didn't have the ramp up that you normally would have in a gubernatorial campaign, right? It was a 100-day campaign. You spend a lot of money in a very short period of time, but he didn't have the same kind of luxury of building that campaign over the course of a year or 2 years as others have. But, I mean, he's in a very good, positive position, and has been incredibly popular. And frankly, Hoosiers like leaders who just get things done and are low drama. And
you don't do much, is what you're saying.
No, he's doing all kinds of things. But you know,
if you're a Democrat looking perhaps at running for governor,
the polls at this point with Joe Donnelly, where the percentage that didn't have an opinion on him or didn't think favorably of him was similar to this. And I remember being told across the table that was the kiss of death for Joe Donnelly. But it's interesting, it is not for Eric Holcomb.
Well, he is not the typical incumbent here with such a shorter
And he hasn't done anything since he's been there. I mean, he talked about the big hate crimes bill. He didn't deliver on that. He talked about teacher pay. He didn't deliver on that. I mean, he puts Band-Aids on things and doesn't do much or stand for much. Now, he's an amicable enough guy, and he does reach across the party lines occasionally. He spoke at the Birch Bayh Memorial Service, for example, but he hasn't done anything. And so that makes him, I think, a little bit more vulnerable. Yes, it depends a large part, as we said, which is why the gubernatorial elections in Indiana occur in presidential years. It depends in large part about what happens at the top of the ticket. But we'll see.
We have incredible progress on jobs. We have an incredible investment in education.
Jobs are happening everywhere in the country. We don't have an incredible
year and a half from an election.
We don't
so
have
I mean,
a
that's
credible
the difference. Our Donnelly conversation was
we
in the heat of the election.
We have not
let me,
have
let me
investment
ask this.
In
Regardless,
education.
I'm not going to take a position on whether or not Joe Donnelly is whether or not Eric Holcomb is doing something or not. But regardless, he's a Republican in Indiana. Is that really all you need at this point?
I mean, I think it gets you more than halfway, yeah. I mean, obviously, given the 100-day lead-in he had to his first thing, I mean, I think his reelect bid will be largely on connecting with voters who aren't aware, though it is a little bit of a concern when you're in year three and that many people still don't know who you are.
Finally, Holcomb this week turned 51 years old, and he was presented with a cake on his birthday as he unveiled the first round of grants at his Next Level Trails program. And the cake read, "Happy Trails, Governor." Ann Delaney, was this a cute nod?
Should we all sing?
Yeah, well, no, was this a cute nod to the program he was announcing, or is this kind of vaguely menacing from whoever gave him the
cake? I think you're overthinking this, I think. I mean, you know.
If somebody gave me the same thing that said Happy Trails, I'd be just a little worried.
Would you? That's because you used to watch reruns of, what was it, Roy Rogers? Or who was
something
it that
like
had
that.
Gene Autry, one of those Happy Trails
maybe,
to you?
Maybe I did.
Yeah.
Well, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, Lindsay Erdody of the Indianapolis Business Journal, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller, built on a 100-plus-year foundation of legal service. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients stay ahead of a changing world, working to develop an understanding of each client's needs to help build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.